Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahulastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Clapham Grand. Please welcome a man who has one fan in Angola. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, Clapham. Hello. Oh, lovely to see you. Thank you so much for coming along. Welcome to Richard Herring's Loose Spiders and Tarantulas podcast. You've got to come up with a new... There's so many podcasts, aren't you? You've got to come up with a new idea. What we've done is we've released spiders and tarantulas, which is a kind of spider, but into the audience. And about 10% of the audience will die tonight. But they're all aware of that. They all signed a release form. And if you come out of this alive... You each win a cheque for £10,000. That's the new podcast. Worth the risk, I think. No, I was hanging out with Logan Paul and Floyd Mayweather the other day. This was topical at the time of recording. And after 20 minutes of staring at each other intensely and lightly kissing, one of them broke off finally. He said they called it Rahulastapas. That's what they call it. Not bad, is it, those guys? They made $50 to $100 million each for that fight. I'm wondering if I can get some fights going with some other podcasters. I'd take $1 million. I'd fight Frank Bruno for £20,000. I'll give it a go. Rowing machine update last week. If you're here last week, you'll know that I had a rowing machine that I'd owned for a week but hadn't got out of the box yet. It's out of the box. I've put it together myself, and I've been on it 2 times. That's £425 a go so far, or £850 an hour. We'll see how that goes. See how that carries on. Oh yeah, I've
I had a bath before the show. That's just the kind of guy I am. I'm clean. And some water got in my ear and didn't come out of my ear. So I can't actually hear anything, which is literally something that happened to Alan Partridge. That's how... So I can't hear anything. So don't even try heckling. I don't really listen to the guests' answers anyway. You know that. But today will be doubly the case. I won't be able to do that. I'll talk about this, as I mentioned at the start. I found the analytics thing on the Acast Creators app, which tells me where my listeners are, who they are, what they are, and where they're listening. 74% of people who listen to this podcast on Acast are men, which I was surprisingly low to say. It doesn't say how many of them work in IT, but I'm assuming 99%. 99%, there's an IT guy clapping there. Angola, in the last month, one download in Angola. That's not even one that's one person has downloaded one episode. And they're gone, nah, this is not for me. Won't listen to any more. 80% of my listeners are in the UK, which is very bad for my world tour credentials. The United States comes next. And Australia, nearly 18,000 people, and 8,000 downloads. Not enough to tour either of those countries. The other end is that the zeros are very much everything that would get zero in Pointless. I was sad to say nobody listens to this show in the Vatican City, which that means the Pope doesn't, unless he's got one of those things where he can change the location. That means the Pope doesn't listen, and I'm really fucked off about it. I thought he would listen. I've got 954 downloads in South Korea. Not bad. And zero in North Korea. I don't know what's going on there. Don't know why. I love South Korea. They're the best. That's terrific. Oh, and look, I was back in Cheddar. I ran around Cheddar Reservoir this week, which is something I've done a lot of times, but I'm increasingly thinking, I wonder how many times I will run around Cheddar Reservoir. But I'm back running. I'm back trying to get fit. And I've signed up to do a half marathon in November at Nebworth. It's near to where I live. Then someone, when I said that, they said, you know, that's a very, very hilly half marathon. So that was probably foolish. As a gratitude to the people who removed my testicle, I don't know why I'm grateful to them. I've decided to run that for the Lister Hospital and the Mount Vernon Cancer Centre. So if you would like to sponsor me, go to justgiving.com/monoball and we'll try and raise some money cancer made a mistake in choosing me. I'm a powerful enemy of cancer. I'm going to get the best cancer. No one else in Hertfordshire is going to get cancer now. And cancer will be going, why did I go after that? His ball looks so tasty. I just couldn't resist it. And now look, cancer's been wiped out in North Hertfordshire. As a result, if you don't like me and think the Lister Hospital was wrong to save me, just go in and smash up a scanner or something. So it's fair, you know, you can all make your choices. But thank you very much to everyone who's donated already, and I'll let you know how the half marathon goes. Ironically, I think it will probably kill me to do a half marathon. But I love an ironic death. And if I die, then it'll go like be £1 million, won't it? When you die on a marathon, you really raise some funds, don't you? That's the thing. So I'll be thinking that as I collapse on a hill in Nebworth. Why have I chosen that hill to die on? I'll be thinking. I'm just full of jokes, aren't I? That was amazing. Just can't stop. Just made that up on the top of my head. My guest this week was just in the toilet. Hopefully he's back and ready to go. Otherwise, this is going to be awkward. Excuse me. He is probably best known. This is the most offensive one of these I've ever done, as it is a very recent credit. He's probably best known, isn't he, as the host of Beat the Internet. We all watched that, didn't we? We loved that show. We all loved that. Beat the Internet. Will you please welcome John Robbins, ladies and gentlemen? Here he is, Beat the Internet. He's from there. The guy from Beat the Internet. Beat the Internet.
Thank you very much. For the avoidance of doubt, the full title is Beat the Internet with John Robbins. Or as we shortened it to BTIWJR.
Is there another series of Beat the Internet with John Robbins in the pipeline?
Well, Richard, when you work as a TV commissioner, and you know you've got something pretty special on your hands, sometimes it's nice to just wait. Maybe forever. And just hold on to it a bit like Bitcoin. In the hope that the price of the format, Beat the Internet with John Robbins, will become so expensive that you can then sell it to America for £1 billion.
Yeah, that could happen.
And that might happen.
That might happen.
It was mismanaged. It was mismanaged.
It was a hubristic title for a TV. It's like, this TV show is going to beat the internet. We'll show the internet.
It is a hubristic title for a TV show with a budget of approximately £12. But the people who worked on it have become lifelong friends.
Good.
In that I got a text from one of them 2 months ago.
Okay, good.
Sorry, I brought my own cans.
It's all right. It's nice to see a guest, you know, relaxed enough to drink a few beers.
Well, do you know what? I got your message about doing this, and I thought, I'm just going to have a lovely time. I'm going to have a few cans.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that. I then Googled the beers available at the venue, and with the greatest respect to one of London's most prestigious venues, the selection is absolute dog shit. But that's the only downside of the venue. I'm sorry. Corona, Bud, and Bud Zero. Are you high? Goose Island IPA, which is their only non-lager, is 5.9%, which is essentially meth.
What have you gone for? It looks like quite a funky... It's an IPA.
Well, this is the problem, Richard. I went to Sainsbury's and they've got Neck Oil, which is one of my favourite beers, but, and do be warned, it goes through me like a freight train.
That's okay. I was actually... I was looking back over because David Baddiel's on next week, and so I prepare early for these shows. And he actually went for a wee in the middle of his last appearance on...
Did he?
Yeah, I'd forgotten, but... There's a very good resource for this podcast called Rahalastupa, rahalastupa.com, and it's someone's gone through, I should know her name, Catherine, and I've forgotten her surname for the moment, she'll be in the credits. She has gone through and made a list of all the emergency questions, all the different the cool kids, all that sort of stuff, and any notable things that happened in the podcast.
Amazing.
So I'm able to go back and look at that so I don't have to listen through, which is a relief. David Baddiel went to the toilet during... I mean, off stage, it wasn't like he didn't just... He's getting pretty old, but I don't think he's yet going to just piss himself on stage. But you could be the first openly on stage. Right, look, I'd like to thank you for... this is about episode 336, but on episode 300, took my job and you hosted. It must have been a big honour for you. I don't know if I got
it
to
talk to you. Well, do you know, it actually was a huge honour to partake in Jura Rahustalapa.
Yeah.
LATBM, Jura Rahustapa Labutum. No, I was very honoured. Richard, I still get a buzz when I see that you've texted me because I used to quote Simon Quinlack in the playground. Some of the people here are too young to know what that is. Yeah. But
and then they said, you're 28 years old, John Gow, the playground. That's good because that was actually quoting... to Woman Joe at the same time. They don't know what it was. They're too young to know what it was. They haven't even shouted to Woman Joe back at me. That's how young.
Oh my God!
That's how young this audience. I've got a very young audience. In fact, the average age, near 44% of people who listen to this podcast. I haven't got it written down. Are in the age 35 to 44, which is, are you in that yet? You've 34?
Yes, yep. I'm 39.
So you're in the, yeah, you're bang in the middle of my main demographic. Any good at IT?
No, absolutely appalling at anything to do with that. But it gives me a lot of anxiety, sort of the world of information, because I don't really know how to control it.
Yeah, it is scary. Did you see this, is it like Logan Paul fighting the Floyd Mayweather?
I read about it on the BBC News website. Yeah. I don't know who Logan Paul is.
Well, he's a very successful YouTuber, which you are as well, a very successful YouTuber. So,
you were
bragging to me backstage about the huge amounts you make from advertising on YouTube.
Yeah, well, me and Alex Horn every week play golf together for a purse of $60 billion. That's my sort of only real foray into YouTube.
Yeah.
I had a YouTube channel that I sort of started when I was starting comedy, when everyone was doing it and uploading all of their sort of sets. But on retrospect, when I look back at them, I realise they were all awful and incredibly embarrassing. So I just sort of, I spend quite a lot of time deleting my online self because it causes so much shame.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't have the rights to delete yourself, so you just have to sort of accept the shame.
Yes. But I think you've got enough profile. I mean, I think, basically, Logan Paul's a YouTuber. He fought another YouTuber to begin with. I want to say KSI is called. Am I right, kid? I'm down with the kids, aren't I? I know all about the YouTubers. They've had two fights. The first one was a draw, and then the KSI won the second one. But Logan Paul goes on to fight. He fought Floyd Mayweather, who's a proper boxer. Floyd has made $50 to $100 million.
Fuck me.
From one fight.
I guess it's the power of. I guess lockdown showed a lot of comedians this is the power of realizing you have a fan base and you can circumvent traditional gatekeepers, if I can be so bold.
Yes, you can.
So maybe me and Ellis should kick the shit out of each other.
Yeah. Well, I think, or you could fight the off menu, you two fight the off menu guys. I think that would be big. People would pay to see James Acaster being punched in the face by John Robbins. Who would win that?
Yeah, but I've got a horrible feeling Acaster's like got a rage mode.
Yeah.
Like, me and Ed, you look at our physiques and say, A, we're pretty much the same physique-wise. B, we're probably the stronger pair. But I think Ellis is more of like a grappler. And I think Acaster would just sort of throw some kind of... He would like a special move that you would get on Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Where Acaster would like turn into flames. And I think he would win.
Yeah, maybe. But the thing is, see, I think if you did it, I think you could probably make a £1 million.
Do you really?
I think you could if you hiked it up, if you stared at each other for a lot of time too close to each other just beforehand, something like that. You just have a little gimmick.
But the problem is that wasn't there about 10 years ago, didn't Ricky Gervais have a boxing match that was sort of quite a bleak affair?
Well, I know Bob Mortimer was involved. Bob Mortimer had to fight. He talked about it on his podcast. Who was it? So you've all listened to that one recently. Who did he have to fight? It was Les Dennis versus Bob Mortimer.
I mean, it sounds like a dream someone had.
Was it Ricky Gervais against Anthea Turner's husband? Grant Bofi.
Well, I don't think they're still together because I watched the final ever... I retract this if it's not true.
Okay.
I watched the final ever performance of We Will Rock You, the musical, sat next to Turner, who was with the breathy New Zealand one from Dragon's Den, who I think they were maybe dating at the time, and they talked throughout the whole thing, and I was absolutely livid.
I really hope that she was just having an affair and you've just outed her. But that we just... Dragon Bovey's just eating his little chocolate bar that he likes. He likes that chocolate bar, doesn't he? That milk chocolate bar they had at the wedding, he loves it. He's just, Rich, listen to Alistair, love John Roberts.
Well, if I have unintentionally outed Anthea, then I think that's fair recompense for talking through one of the, the greatest artistic triumphs of the last 500 years.
I never saw We Will Rock You. I had Nigel Planer on in the
Did
series.
Did you?
Earlier. Yes. And we didn't talk about We Will Rock You.
Probably wise. Isn't his contract?
Well, I was more fearful I would say something rude to him, and I was being very charming to him. But that was his best time. I don't think was he in the final one of it? Yeah.
I don't think he was in the final one. No. He was. I also saw the first performance of We Will Rock You, the musical. So I sort of caught the. It was quite lucky in a sense. I saw the first one and the last one. The first one, I sat behind May himself.
Did you see every single performance? I saw the first one, the last one, and the 10,000 in between.
No, the two. So
you're
I
behind
saw
May.
I sat behind May on the first one. May was on stage on the last one, and I briefly said hello. That was the first time I ever met him. Was after that, and my the guy who. Runs the company that do my tours afterwards. So, do you want to come meet Brian? I was like, yes, please. He's like, Brian, come over here. This is John. He's a big fan. I said, Brian, you signed my Guild copy of your guitar backstage at the Colston Hall in Bristol in 1998. And then I just realised I'd stated a fact. I hadn't actually sort of said, I like you or who I am. I just said, and he said, oh, great. And we had a photo and I just went home. Aww. Good times.
That's nice. What did you think of the film Bohemian Rhapsody?
I saw it as an early rough cut before they'd done all the CGI in Wembley.
Okay.
So on the Wembley scenes, they'd got like Rami Malek and the band, but when you looked out to the audience, it was a completely white background with little stick figures waving because they'd yet to apply the CGI. But the moment that film started, the hairs on my neck just stood on end. And I had goosebumps for 2.5 hours. And I watched it again when it came out. And then there was a lot of sort of some negative press and some sort of memes about the editing. And I just thought, I'm not going to see it ever again because I want to remember that moment when sort of something that's been so special to me suddenly is being seen by everyone. And so I haven't seen it since. Okay. And I think Rami's performance is exceptional. I think it's a brilliant piece of feel-good work that perhaps dodges a few more interesting moments. But then what do you expect? You know, the band are making it and they want as many people to see it. I thought some of the criticism I read about... I overheard a conversation on a tube train, a couple of people who'd were reading about it in the paper, and they said, basically they were having a conversation that said, oh, they've sort of made Freddie less outrageous and gay. Like they've sanitized it. But the thrust of their conversation was that, because you know, it was his lifestyle, that's why he died. He died because of his lifestyle. They're trying to hide that, which is such an offensive criticism to say that, basically saying that anyone has ever been guilty of getting HIV or dying of AIDS, that in some way you are morally responsible for that.
Yeah.
Which, like, you know, no one who's caught COVID has caught it on purpose. There's also, you know, it's a PG-12 film. You know, if he was straight, you wouldn't show him having full sex with an erect penis. You know, you can't... Well, they didn't show him having full sex. Well, of course, you fucking idiot.
I'd rather see Brian May having full sex with Anita Dobson.
Well, each to their own.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to watch.
Would it?
I'd like to see it right now. Like, not even in the past. I'd like to see him...
I think this conversation is getting into a territory where I might need to text you after the show.
Okay. Do you think it's weird that Brian May went out with someone who had the same hair as him? Doesn't that put you off the Queen?
I mean,
I guess if you like Queen, nothing could put you off Queen because the music would have done it already if you had any taste.
We're in Stuart Lee territory. I think you've let yourself down there. What's wrong with people liking amazing music that brings nations together?
Yeah. That's the 26% of female listeners getting behind that. I would have thought, actually, probably high percentage of Queen. But IT, Queen, male... That's probably my listenership. That's fair enough. Hey, you're in the Beano. Well, how did you get in the Beano? I saw you were in the Beano.
Because off menu you were in the Beano and we got annoyed. No, we had an unsung... So on our radio show on Fridays on 5 Live, we have a segment called Unsung Hero where we speak to people who sort of perhaps don't get the recognition they deserve, and we spoke to an artist who illustrates the Beano. And I think... it came as a result of that.
Oh, okay. Was that exciting? Did you read the Beano as a child?
No.
No. I get confused between the Dandy and the Beano merge into one, and I don't know which characters were in which one. The Dandy was not as good as the Beano. I'm going to go that far, but
I read a magazine called Quiz Kids.
Oh yeah,
and I was a member of the Quiz Kids Club, for which you got a Velcro wallet.
Okay,
and that's really all I'm willing to say on the issue.
I liked Whiz and Chips, and my grandma, she would send all of my brother and sister and me, they'd rolled up a magazine every month or every 2 weeks or whatever it was. I had Whizzer and Chips. I can't remember what my brother and sister had.
Whiz on Chips.
Whizzer and Chips.
Oh, right.
There was a comic called Whizzer and there was a comic called Chips. And then they decided to bring the two together for Whizzer and Chips.
It's quite hard to say, isn't it?
There was a guy who had a black eye all the time. That might have been Chips, might have been Whizzer. Who remembers Whizzer and Chips? It's a good one for cool kids. I'll remember that for future episodes. that's what I like. It's nice to be in there, nice to be in there.
Yeah, really sweet. I will treasure the at message that alerted me to it for the rest of my life.
Okay. I've got some new emergency questions. This one isn't finished, but I quite like it.
Okay.
As it is. And you'll see. Would you rather be able to fart the Blockbusters theme tune?
I'm not far off, to be honest.
Okay.
Especially after this neck oil.
Or
I did one that sounded like The Last Post.
Did you? Well, you don't need. You might want the other option. So, would you rather be able to fart the Blockbusters theme tune or own a cat?
Oh, own a cat!
I think there was going to be more to it. I think it's going to be own a cat that can do something. But I quite like, would you rather be able to... Like, that isn't just a choice you can make.
I'd love to own a cat.
Well, you can do it. You just get one.
But I live by a road, and I would, and I'm way. But I would.
You can just get a little feeding thing. Like my cat, I got two cats from Battersea Dog and Cats Home. They were brother and sister. They'd been overbred, and the black one died about the age of three because she was been overbred in a. Organs collapse is very sad.
God.
I saw the. It's the only. I think that was. She was called Lino, after the Thundercats.
I'm too sad about it.
I think it's the only creature I've witnessed the actual definite death of.
Yeah, I witnessed the death of my cat and one being run over on the A4 after a diversion. Bad. Oh my God!
But you see the light. I remember the light going out in her eyes.
Do you?
Yeah. It was quite exciting, and I understand why serial killers get into it. That's often how it starts in it for serial killers. They see a cat, someone injects it.
I think if I had a cat, I would just love it too much, and my heart would break into 1,000 tiny pieces when it died.
Well, they do die.
I know.
The other one's still alive, Smithers. He's the stupidest cat that's ever lived. He's like 10 years old now. It's incredible. He would used to jump out of second floor windows without seeing what was underneath. I thought he'd been killed because my neighbour came around and said, I think your cat's been run over. And then I came out the back gate and I could see his paw under the gate. And I thought, and I've always pretended I hate the cat. And my wife was out and she loves it. And I felt really sad. Then I opened the door or the gate. And then he just jumped up and ran in. And he'd just been sleeping. He was covered in leaves and stuff. He looked like he'd been run over. He got out, but he doesn't go out of the house. So you can do it. He doesn't leave the house usually. He goes in the garden a bit now. I just lost my glasses. Hold on. Oh. So own a cat. What do you think a good end to that sentence would be? It needs to be more jeopardy in that question.
I think it's a funnier answer.
It is. I'm going to leave it like that one. I'm writing a new book of emergency questions. That's going to be in there. Would you rather... This is an interesting question, John. Would you rather be a horse chestnut tree or an apple tree? Which kind of tree would you rather be?
I'd rather be an apple tree because horse chestnut trees, certainly in the 80s and 90s, got an awful lot of sort of violent attacks to try and loosen the conkers.
Yeah.
So I'd rather be an apple tree... and be in the background of perhaps an episode of Inside the Factory where Greg Wallace and Cherry Healy and Dr. Ruth Goodman research how factories make cider.
Okay. Do you think a tree gets hurt if someone throws a stick at it? I don't think it feels the pain, does it? Surely it would.
Does a tree get hurt if someone throws a stick at it?
There is a tale
in a wood
yeah.
that no one sees or hears.
There's a Tales of the Unexpected, again, probably slightly before your time, where someone can hear trees screaming as they're cut down.
That's the BFG. Can hear ladybirds and plants screaming.
Okay.
It's quite an odd, kind of bleak idea. This yeah. guy is just sort of, like if Dr. Doolittle was real, yeah. he would just be absolutely terrorized by animals going, "Why? Get me out of here! It hurts! I'm so sad all the time! Where are my children? I'm going to be murdered!" Someone should make that as like a dystopian Dr. Doolittle. Man who goes insane listening to the terror of animals that we inflict on them.
Yeah.
Slash the odd cat being quite happy.
Yeah.
I'm not dead, Richard.
I wasn't dead, I was just blind.
No, I'd rather be an apple tree and I would like my bounty to turn into cider.
Okay.
As long as it's not old moot cider, because I think that's rubbish.
Okay.
Why do we need to import cider from New Zealand? Sorry, that's not a political statement. I just like...
Brexit,
one of the best cider-producing countries in the world, and you go to a bar and they're like, "What cider have you got?" "We've got black currant and lime old moot." Why?
All right.
Sorry.
One more emergency question, because I've got a lot of proper questions to ask you. I just want to try something. Oh, no, I'm going to change my mind. It's a new one. Would you rather have to always wash your clothes in a dishwasher or always wash your plates, pans, cups, etc. in a washing machine? NB, you'd have to use the dishwasher capsules in the dishwasher and the laundry tablets in the washing machine. You can still use the dishwasher for dishes if you choose to wash your clothes in the dishwasher, and you can wash your clothes in the washing machine if you do your dishes there. So,
I think we might be into a bit of a no-brainer here.
Really?
Because I'm a dishwasher slash washing machine analyst.
Yeah, that's why I thought you'd like this.
So what would happen... It, obviously, if you put your plates in the washing machine, they're all going to break.
Well, let's say they don't. You could put your clothes...
So it's a magic washing yeah. machine.
If you put your clothes in there as well, there's a chance they'll survive.
Like when you wash shirts with a towel. No, I think we have to assume that the washing machine is going to break all of your plates and cutlery. Well, you wouldn't break your cutlery. It would break the washing machine.
Don't you think your pants and socks will break the dishwasher?
No.
Okay.
Because they would be static. So what would happen? What I would do is I would put the clothes in the dishwasher on eco, which on my dishwasher is 50 degrees. That's 180 minutes, that cycle. Then I would put them in the washing machine with just an extra rinse. I think it would work.
They can't go into the washing machine. If you make that choice, you can still do your dishes in the dishwasher, but you can only do your clothes in the dishwasher. You can't.
Well, I would have that over dishes in the washing machine. Okay. The problem you're looking at here is I'm going to need to invest in a tumble dryer, which I don't currently own.
Okay.
Bit of a bone of contention between me and my fiance. She says, get a tumble dryer. I say, there's no room. She says, you've got a beer fridge. You could use that space.
Oh.
But
trouble in paradise. Doesn't sound like it's going to work out, does it?
The clothes would be sodden.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be even damp. They would be sodden.
Yeah.
So you'd have to wring them out, but that would be the least worst option.
What if you got plastic plates and cups? You could get a whole cocky
set. It would okay. Plastic plates and cups. They're still going to wear down over time.
Yeah.
But
everything wears down over time.
That's true.
I break a lot of stuff in the dishwasher, I have to say. I break a lot. Most of my breakages of things occur.
How are you? Whoa, whoa, whoa. How are you loading your dishwasher?
Well, if you drop a knife or something into the, you know, you pick up a knife off the. I've got my knife, they lay flat on the top shelf.
No, sometimes they slip through.
Get
yourself one of the little baskets.
Well, okay, it's a small dishwasher. I've only got a small dishwasher.
Why have you only got a small dishwasher?
I don't know. I've got two kids. There was only room for a small dishwasher in the space, the dishwasher space.
Hmm.
It's very annoying. I have to put my bit. If we have like dinner plates, I get two of them in it, but only if they're right at the edge.
Fuck that.
And I can lay them down, but then that takes a lot of time.
I used to be jealous of you. I'm not after that.
I think a lot about dishwashers, I have to say.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, you're turning into quite a boring middle-aged man. I've noticed.
Yeah, go on.
Well, you're sort of obsessed with golf. I had listened to you on your radio show talking about golf for 20 minutes, I would say.
It was this week. Answer to a listener's email. Yeah. Also, Richard, let me give you a little glimpse behind the magician's cloth. On the BBC, you are not allowed to plug enterprises that are outside of the BBC. Okay. That means that Ellis James, who is the BBC's lapdog and who will create, present and write a very good documentary about Welsh football for the BBC every year, is able to talk about that on our show a lot. However, my projects are far more varied. You know, an internet-based quiz show on Digital Channel Dave, now defunct, a YouTube golfing channel, a show in development again with Dave. It's a very broad church.
Yeah.
So in order to pass the editorial guidelines of Auntie, there are certain ways you can talk about what you're doing in your life without it being, I think the phrase is undue prominence.
Okay.
So, an email about golf is an absolute goldmine for me to be able to mention that I have a golf YouTube channel without pissing off the Queen.
But you also have a golf YouTube channel, which again is part of my problem with you. Who wants to watch a comedian playing sport against another person? That is my question. Nobody wants to watch that. It's ridiculous. It's called Bad Golf. You're both pretty good at golf.
Oh, when we started, we were really bad. I'm now better. Alex is still really bad. The first round back after lockdown, we played and his first ball went into the water and then he lost a ball a hole for the next six holes. That's as bad as you can get. He ran out of balls.
Well, it's still not bad enough for me. If I came on that show, I would be properly bad at golf.
Well, you can come on the show.
Come on and I'll show you what bad golf
is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll show you what bad snooker is. I'll show you what bad golf is. You've got 40,000 subscribers. You're the highest handicapped player to have a sponsorship deal with Puma.
Well, it's not a financial deal. It's just they give us the clubs and the clothes and stuff, which is very, very kind of them. And it just makes you feel great because, like, they say, oh, we've got a new range of clubs out. Do you want to come and get fitted? And you're like, oh, this is what it's like being, I don't know, Bryson DeChambeau or Tiger Woods or whatever. So, I'm obsessed with it because it's exercise and statistics.
Okay.
And that's why I love it. But, yeah, in answer to your original question, very, very boring.
Yeah. Well, it's what my mum and dad, you know, I associate golf with my mum and dad, and who are now too old. I think my mum could probably still...
But golf is trying to change that.
Is it?
Yeah. Golf is much cooler now than it was 20 years ago. It is, Richard. It really is. Have you seen Ricky Fowler? He's got a little moustache.
From EastEnders?
No. Oh, yeah, it might be. Ricky Fowler is super cool.
Okay.
And
Tiger Woods crashing his car. That was pretty good.
Did crash
maybe
his
that
car.
Made golf very more high exciting, speed. Wasn't it?
Well, Tiger Woods has always made golf more exciting.
He has. He's sleeping with women and stuff.
He's had a lot of sexual relationships. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Actually, I'm going to give it a go. If it's having extramarital affairs and then breaking your legs in a car crash, I'm in.
Yeah.
Is he going to be all right?
I guess he's sort of the Hunter S. Thompson of golf in a mad way.
He has. And you are engaged. Congratulations. Are you slightly hoping it'll go wrong so you can get another show out of that? Or is it sort of fingers crossed?
No.
No. Okay.
No. I'm just hoping it goes really well for the rest of my life.
Wow. Okay.
And then I sort of die aged 80 under a blossoming apple tree whilst listening to Astral Weeks. I kind of got it mapped out.
Okay.
But no, I'm so, so happy.
That's a good sign. It's a bad sign when you go into it thinking, I'll give it a couple of years, see how it goes.
Well, we've been together now for 4 years, and I tell you something. When you finally realize, people often say, all I want is for you to be happy, or all I want them to be happy. And what they actually mean is, what I want is for you to be happy on my terms.
Yeah.
So I want you to be happy whilst doing what I want us to do. But actually, there's nothing I wouldn't do to make her happy, because her happiness gives me so much pleasure, even if that was her sort of, you know, if she said, I want to move to Scotland for the rest of my life,
wow,
and see
even that,
you once
even
a year, that would just fill me so much joy, because she's such a wonderful person that I genuinely want her to be happy on her terms. And sometimes when you have friends in relationships and they're like, oh, I've got to go to this fucking wedding next week and I don't know anyone there. And I'm like, why? And we're like, because he or she wants me to go. And it's like, well, that's not fun for anyone. You're being dragged to a wedding you don't want to go to. Why not just go, you go and do something you want to do, and I'll do something I want to do, and then we'll meet after, and we'll talk about the nice things we've done, as opposed to people constantly feeling they have to do stuff they don't want to do.
Okay.
So that's, I guess, kind of a foundation on which our relationship is based.
That sounds nice. I did a gig for your fiancé's parents, your parents-in-law.
I've heard about
that. They talked about it to you? Or have I told you?
No. My fiancé's dad mentioned the gig to me, and then I saw an interview with you when you were asked about your worst ever gig.
Yeah.
I put two and two together.
Oh, dear. Well, look, we won't talk about it anymore. Out of respect to your mother and father-in-law, I won't go into it any further.
Out of respect for you, I won't tell their side of the story.
I tell you what, I sat next to Elaine Stritch and talked to her for quite a long time at dinner, and then she said she was going to go before I did my stand-up, and she seemed to have gone, and then I did 10 minutes of Talking Cock, and Elton John didn't like it. It was a weird gig. So no one liked it because Elton John didn't like it. And then a waiter came up to me afterwards and said, Elaine Stritch actually stayed to watch the show, watch you do your set, and she stood in the doorway going, oh, God. Why the fuck do you tell me that?
Right, get this. You know how all comedy critics are of a certain ilk? Can we say that?
Yes.
I was asked to present the award the year after I won with Steve Coogan.
Sure.
And I wasn't going to do it because I felt very strange about going back to Edinburgh. But when they said, Steve Coogan's doing it, will you come to Edinburgh, put you up an hotel? I was like, of course I will. And it was honestly such a big moment for me, more probably than winning the award the year before, the fact that me and Steve Coogan were in a little green room having a drink and about to present the award to the next year's winner. Anyway, the year after that, I'm at the ceremony, just stood in the audience, and a comedy critic comes up. He sees me from across the other side of a crowded room, this bit, like, rammed with people. He sees me, he goes like, waves, go, oh, cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. So he takes him about a minute to get through, and he's sort of walking through everyone, going, John. He eventually gets to me. I'm like, oh, hey, how you doing? He goes, I've had to tell you this for a year. You know, last year when you were presenting the award with Steve Coogan, I was like, yeah. And he said, well, I was backstage, and Steve asked you, were you going to do any material? And you said, no, not really. I'm just going to say a few words, and then I'll bring you on, and we'll do the award. Anyway, you went on, and do you remember you sort of did a speech, didn't you? And I went, yeah, I did a sort of 2-3 minute speech. He went, yeah, well, amazing. Steve was backstage going, the cunt! The fucking cunt! He said he wasn't going to do any fucking material. Piece, fuck me, man! Lying piece of shit! Anyway, it's so good to see you, John. I just had to tell you that. I went, what the fuck? Why are you mend? What is wrong with you? Like, you've just ruined everything. And you made out when you sort of caught my eye from across the room. You had a fun anecdote to tell me. Like, are you thick? And I'm sure that if the roles had been reversed and someone was doing really well at a thing, they were about to bring me out, I'd go, bloody hell, he's doing really well and I'm going to have to follow this or whatever. That's fine. That's what comedians are like. But I cannot understand the personality of someone who thinks it's a year later and I've got my great anecdote that's going to crush his only dream.
Yeah, it's nice. So, I want to ask you this question, and I hope I haven't asked you this before. Are you ever mistaken for John Robbins, the mayor of Dover and MP from the 1560s?
No.
No.
But I do get added into a few news stories from John Robbins, who is the chief of the Yorkshire Police Force.
Oh, okay, there is a... Because all the John Robbins I've found are dead, and there's quite a lot. Are you ever mistaken for the English ranter and plebeian prophet from the 1650s?
No, but I've got his pamphlet. I got it off Amazon. He was a ranter and thought he was Christ.
Yeah.
And made people lay palm leaves wherever he went before, I believe, being incarcerated.
Yes. Very much like all the John Robbins that go through that stage. Are you ever mistaken for John Robbins, the mayor of Stafford and MP from the 1750s? There's a John Robbins comes along every 100 years.
No.
A famous John Robbins.
I am sometimes mistaken for Stuart Goldsmith.
Are you? Okay.
Including by people who have been on Stuart Goldsmith's podcast.
Are you ever mistaken for the Canadian academic and humorist John Robbins, who died in 1952?
Not to date, no. Okay.
Are you ever mistaken for the rugby union Welsh international John Robbins, who died in 2007? There's some crossover.
No, I haven't.
Has Ellis ever mentioned
him? He's never mentioned that. No. Do you know what? He's not really a rugby guy. He really is a football guy, Ellis. He's obviously very aware of Welsh rugby culture, but he would argue till he is red in the teeth that Wales is national sport.
Okay, he's wrong.
Yeah. I don't say that to him.
It's rugby.
I say, yeah, of course, yeah.
So give him to ring me and I'll tell him. Okay. Next time he says it, I'll say, mate, it's rugby. It's definitely rugby. Definitely rugby. You do Cameo, right? I'm quite interested in Cameo. You're on Cameo. You're still on Cameo?
Yes.
I've talked this to a few people about this because I'm kind of interested. So if you don't know what Cameo is, you can make John Robbins do anything you want, including sexual acts, as long as they're filmed. If you pay enough money, he'll do a message, he'll do anything you want for £43.50. It's not much, is it?
It's pretty reasonable.
That is very cheap. How did you arrive? Was that testing? You end up to 44, went, ooh. Bit. No, a lot of people are being put off by the ticket price.
It's an interesting question. It's one of the most boring answers you'll ever hear.
Okay, I'd like to hear it.
So Cameo transactions happen in US dollars.
Oh, okay.
So I've set a figure at which I think it's reasonable for me to do a video after Cameo's cut and the sort of transaction fees. However, because the dollar is getting stronger against the pound, I have to increase that in order to maintain my GBP minimum.
Yeah.
But I think it's more an American thing, is like, how much do you charge on Cameo is almost like a sort of status thing. Whereas I think actually what is really great about Cameo is doing as many videos as possible, because it's really nice to be able to interact with people. And also, you know, I started doing it in January when I was worried my job didn't exist anymore and I was in quite a dark place. And it's given me an ability to interact with people every day and almost treat them like little sort of 2 or 3 minute comparing moments. Mm-hmm. So it sort of kept my head in the game. But also people absolutely love them, because most cameos are like sort of 20 seconds of someone holding a camera. Like, if people earning an awful lot of money holding a camera, when you think, get a tripod for a start, find a good angle, find a nice part of your room, and they'll sort of say, you know, hello, here, it's your birthday, thank you so much for liking my film or whatever, I wish you all the best, blah, blah, blah. And it's over. Whereas I do sort of slightly longer ones where I get to sort of interact with the information that they give. But in all seriousness, it was a real boon to the old Bont's health.
Sure.
When in January I was like, I don't know who you are anymore.
Okay.
Because you sit in your living room talking into a microphone twice a week, and outside of that, there's fuck all you do.
Sure.
What do you do? Because you're not getting any of the feedback from people.
Sure. Was there a moment before you started that you thought, has it come to this for me?
Well, do you know what? I was like a lot of comics. I think this is a real comics trait, that you look at someone who's doing something you're not and you're like, oh, fuck him. That fucking idiot doing that shit thing, like an absolute cunt. And then you do it and you're like, yeah, this is really good. But it was Alistair Green doing it. Because he did it, I thought, that sort of legitimizes it. And you watch his videos and they are as funny as the videos he puts on on Instagram. And I think it's like anything. If you create a good product, no matter what it is you're doing, and people want it, you can't really criticize that. And you'd watch Alistair Green's, you know, cameos, and you think, I would pay £100 to have that. And he's like quite cheap.
Yeah.
Well, not cheap, but certainly on the spectrum, when you see that there's some American people charge like $500. And you think, but that's amazing. That would make my day. That would make my friend's birthday. So why not?
I mean, I saw Mae Martin about it, and I think we both agreed that there's a part of you that would quite like to do it.
But you'd be brilliant on it.
I know, but I think I'd do nothing. And I would feel I'd done enough.
But if you do it, please use my referral code.
Okay.
Okay, so anyone listening to this, get in touch. I've got a referral code. Mi casa, su casa. Let's all make a lot of money.
I said this on the Mae Martin one, and nothing happened, so it's fine. If people email me, I just do them for free and say, give some money to charity.
But you can do cameos for charity.
I know, but why not? But then if you do that, then you're doing a full-time job for charity if you're encouraging people to do it. So it's a difficult balance. There's a part of me, you know, all the fucking stupid ventriloquist dummies could make a killing, couldn't they? You'd love that, wouldn't you? Pay thousands to have a phallic carrot daddy to fuck off, wouldn't you?
Bill Bailey does them now.
Does he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so there's
some really... Paul Foot does them. Great value.
Jay from The Inbetweeners makes £200,000 a year.
He is our god.
Oh, I'm just about to make sure. Oh, fucking hell, man. We've gone on for ages already. It's so much fun. It's so much fun being rude to you. It works two ways. It goes both. Well, look, you're doing loads of podcasts. You're doing almost as many online things as me. Maybe more. So you've got... I was listening to the Moon Underwater podcast before the show, which is getting people to create their ideal pub.
Yeah, it's like Desert Island Discs for pubs.
Yeah.
So me and my best friend Robin, who I've known since I was 14, He's the regular and I'm the landlord, and we welcome a guest every week into our mythical pub, which both does and doesn't exist, like all pubs, because most pubs are pubs of the mind, and the pubs that we go to just disappoint us because they don't match up to our pubs of the mind. I'm beginning to realise that a lot of people don't see pubs in the same way that we do. But I will sometimes, if I'm doing a gig and I know there's a pub nearby, even though I can't drink before a gig, I will detour to just let the pub reveal itself as I turn the corner. Because I think pubs have that sort of mythical quality for me, that they represent an escape to a further realm. Not all of them, obviously. Some of them are just horrible. So we run The Moon Underwater, which is taken from the title of George Orwell's essay about the perfect pub. And the guest can stock the bar, choose what goes on the jukebox, they can ban something. And it's really great. And, like, it's nice to do a podcast where we're sort of totally in charge of it. We've got such a great team in our production company who do the Five Live show, Audio Always. So it's quite, there's a lot of ambient music and it sort of elements of sort of, you know, like, do you remember Blue Jam?
Yes.
Where it's sort of, every so often you're thinking, oh, this is a bit different than just a podcast where people are chatting. And Robin's a fantastic musician and he does all the jingles and stuff. And it's just, you know, it's like a ludicrous to call it work because it's so much fun. Also doing the Queen pod.
Yeah.
Which is a track-by-track analysis of every single Queen album.
Great. I'm definitely going to listen to all of that. Does it work if you haven't listened to any of the songs? Can I enjoy it as a surreal, without knowing the songs, or do you ruin it by playing some of the songs?
Play clips of the songs.
That ruins it.
So we're very lucky in that we've got the rights to all of Queen's music, so we can play the songs.
That is lucky to have the rights to. Do you own the rights to all of Queen's music? That is very
unfortunately
lucky.
Not. They're sort of they've been lent to us.
Okay.
But it would make quite an interesting Richard Herring-styled challenge to listen to all 5,000 hours of a track-by-track analysis of every Queen song. A sort of consecutive Queen song spotting.
Yeah, shall I do a podcast of me listening to that?
You should. But don't play the listeners to your podcast, the podcast that you're listening to. It's just your commentary.
I'm doing it. And how do you cope podcast? Is that you won a bronze Sony Award, basically. Was that for How Do You Cope? Did that win the proper award? That won an award, didn't it?
No, so
that was the Five Live show.
Hang on. No, we the Five Live show won a gold ARIA.
Right.
/ formerly known as the Sonys. Then the next year, we won a bronze.
Yeah, bronze is best.
Bronze is best. Also, I was very critical of their bar as well on the stage. So I think I've sort of may have burnt my bridges with the Arias, formerly known as the Sonys. I'm going to start a petition to stop awards changing their names.
Yeah.
Because I keep winning them after they've stopped being recognisable.
Yeah.
So winner of the Edinburgh Comedy Award, formerly the Perrier, and the Arias, formerly the Sony Awards. It's too big of a mouthful, Richard. But How Do You Cope has been nominated for a British Podcast Award, we're really, really pleased about, because that is a that's sort of a different side to the Ellis and John coin. And what a coin it is.
It is, what a coin.
But where we interview just prominent people about difficult periods in their life. So it's sort of, I guess, under the broad banner of mental health, but it's not, in inverted commas, a mental health podcast. You know, it is. But it's more about people giving a very subjective account. And I think that connects with people.
And you've done 100 episodes now of the Five Live show.
Yes.
Which, because in the 100th episode, you discuss how you were received after one episode by Five Live listeners, the regular Five Live listeners.
Yeah.
Who did not predict you would get to 100 episodes.
Two giggling, self-absorbed twerps spouting incomprehensible garbage.
Yeah.
That was, the first text we ever got in.
Yeah. Well, there's a nice clip of the first episode where the lady's going to read out your tweets and she says, I don't think you want to hear.
That was our producer, Jess. Yeah, we said, are there any tweets coming in, like stalling for time? And she was like, yeah, probably don't want to read them, though. But it does, like, ours is a silly show and we're silly people and it doesn't really bother us. A few have got to me, but having previously had a lot of experience with the kind of abuse female comics get on a daily basis, sure, that is of a very, very violent and sexual nature, someone saying you're crud, like a guy in his 70s called Keith saying this is a load of crud, you can't really, that has to be water off a duck's back, yeah, when you know people who every day on Twitter are told they're going to be raped.
Yes.
So it doesn't bother us. Sorry, I've forgotten what my point was.
But also,
was.
You've got to episode 100, so, you know, it's sort of proven its worth. I mean, that's got to be satisfying that, you know, that's happened. But, you know, that also, every new show is going to get that sort of stuff anyway.
Yeah, but I think... Sorry, what was the question you asked? I think I've gone mad.
I think the question was, have you gone mad? And if so, would you remember what the question was? I don't know. I was just talking about it in the 100th episode.
So, A... It's never that bad stuff,
no.
So it's kind of quite easy to laugh at. But B, people have a very, very personal relationship with their radio stations in a mad way.
Yeah.
And you don't really think about it until you either are a big radio fan and something changes or you're on radio, in that if you listen to one radio station all the time and every time you wake up in the morning to make a cup of tea, you turn it on, and when you go to bed it's on, and when you're driving it's on, when that changes, it's like, what the fuck? This my friend's gone. They've sacked my friend.
Yeah.
But people eventually get used to it. But I think the BBC, unlike a commercial station, they can't rebrand. Like, so XFM basically cleared house and did a whole new thing, and this is Radio X. People went apeshit, but it died down after a couple of weeks. Whereas BBC can't really do that because they're... You know, we trust them so much and they're so much part of our lives that you have to sort of change things slightly incrementally. But now we get messages from people saying, which is, you know, damning with faint praise, but they sort of text in and go, oh, when I first heard this, I thought it was a load of shit and you're a couple of absolute fucking idiots. But yeah, I quite like it now.
And so do you think you're going to go back? You haven't done a stand-up show since before the lockdown. Obviously, in a lockdown, probably... was part of the reason that, but are you going to go back and do another stand-up show next year, or are you going to carry on with the online and radio?
I'm sort of struggling with that question a bit because I feel most satisfied and alive and stimulated when I'm writing a new stand-up show, but the point up until that begins, I feel like I'm probably rubbish at it, and if I do it, it'll be crap and everyone will sort of point at me. And because, I mean, I've probably done 10 gigs in the last 2 years, year and a half, I feel so distant from it that all the anxiety builds up and all the sort of fear and self-doubt that I would get if I went on a holiday for 2 weeks and then had a gig.
Yeah.
So you times that by 52. But I will definitely do another stand-up show, and I will definitely do another Edinburgh, and I will definitely do another tour. But at the minute... I spent so much of lockdown trying to work out what I could do that didn't require an audience.
Yeah.
That those sort of fingers in pies are either coming to fruition or being politely declined.
Sure.
But they're now ready to kick on, and everyone's going, oh, the gigs are back. And I'm like, yeah, I know, and I'm fucking terrified. Whereas so many other people are like, oh, it's so great to be back. I'm so excited. But I'm doing a few for a friend called Will who runs amazing gigs and is great fun and books really nice people. And the thing I miss most is just being around other comics backstage and making each other laugh. And I did a gig recently with Bridget Christie and a few others. And it was just so nice to be in a dressing room being silly and sharing our own insecurities and our experiences of lockdown. And Lou Sanders was there, and Phil Wang, and Josh Widdicombe, and all those people that I've just missed and I'm honoured to know and feel quite lucky to be able to hang around with. I almost feel like I'm the audience member who's snuck back into the tent and is like, oh, my God. So to be around those sorts of people is a real privilege. So, yeah, I'll definitely
do a tour again. It is interesting because I think coming out of it, we were talking about this backstage, but there's this sort of bump of coming out of it because we've all, you know, put up with what we've had to put up with and kind of coped with it, and then suddenly coming out of it and experiencing life again. I've really noticed this with the kids and being able to take the kids to see their grandparents and go to parties and stuff, that actually you're suddenly reminded of everything you've lost, and that, you know, it's actually that I've coped quite well through lockdown, and actually coming out of lockdown I'm thinking, oh, this is quite a big deal, and oh my God, you know, we've had 18 months where we haven't had any of this stuff, and that's kind of, you know, I think it's going to hit a lot of people retrospectively, but I also think we will, there'll be a bump and then things will get back to normal, I hope.
Yeah, I also don't, I don't know about you, but I found the second lockdown harder than the first one.
Yeah.
Because the first one was kind of like, wow, this is new and kind of awful, but also exciting and scary, and we get updates every day on the telly and what the hell is going on. And then the second lockdown, I felt really, really down. Mm. And I didn't really know where everything was going for me. Whereas I think the first lockdown was kind of a national one, whereas the second lockdown was just sort of like 60 million existential crises going on. Because we'd all found ways of getting through the first one. I mean, I was very lucky because I live alone, so my lockdown was like essentially like any other day. I just couldn't. What couldn't I do? I guess I couldn't have played squash if I wanted to. So I didn't have sort of dependents or vulnerable people around me. So I'm conscious of that fact. But the second one,
They took my bollock off in the second one, so that was pretty bad for me.
Yeah, that's bad.
I don't know if that happened to you as well. I don't know if that was part of the second
lockdown.
No,
that didn't happen.
They said this is part of it.
Can I ask the question that everyone probably asks you?
Yeah.
Do they put a fake one in?
They can, but I chose. I elected to go mono.
And what was the thinking behind both of those, either decision?
Well, there was no question. I think it's ridiculous. Well, I don't think it's, for me, it felt ridiculous to put one in, because you're only doing it for yourself. I honestly think if I hadn't told my wife I was having a testicle removed and hadn't disappeared for a couple of weeks and come back in pain with a big scar on me, that she wouldn't have noticed. I don't think she'd have noticed. I genuinely don't. And in fact, I was talking to someone else last week whose boyfriend only has one, who lost his who had his taken off as a child, and he told her beforehand, and she said she wouldn't have noticed if he hadn't told her, because I think even if you've got them, you can have a little feel down there and think, oh, one of them's just scooted over the other side or something.
Yeah, and also if you are, I mean, I this is just a, you know, a broad stroke, but if you are going to get involved, just a lightness of touch really is key.
But also, I think if you're...
You don't want to be pressing hard enough to know how many there are, maybe.
No, but also, if you're noticing the balls, that's a sort of insult to the main part of the show. I would say if you're really going, whoa, what's going on with your balls there, mate? Hey!
If you enjoy the support band more than the main act.
Yeah, it is, very much so.
You know, no one came away from Wembley in 86 going, God, Status Quo were good.
So
no, it was Queen's Day.
I felt it was very much just like for your own self-esteem, but I know I've only got one ball, so I would have felt silly having another one. But the week after it happened, I kind of saw myself sideways in the mirror from one side, and then I turned the other way, and it was like being in a music hall act that I don't think would probably do very well, where you had a little boy's scrotum and a grown man's scrotum. Oh, hello, Mr. Scrotum. You could have done that.
Would the music hall act be called Canon?
It could be. But it settles into the middle, so it's fine.
Does it really?
And I would honestly, I've said it before many times to this audience. Guys, get one taken off. Get the big one taken off. My life is so much... It's a risk because you might get testicular cancer from the other one and then you won't have any balls. You only need one. It's much more comfortable. Way more comfortable. I had quite a bit. It was the big one, and it was quite a big one. And then it got bigger. But that's part of the reason I didn't realise that it got bigger, because it was already pretty big.
So you got rid of the expander.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, I mean, obviously, the comedian me, like you said, do you hope your relationship ends and you get a new show? But your mind on this topic and this experience, it must be hard to... You must have so many ideas.
Yeah. Well, I'm
How do you corral them into a sort of a show?
Well, I'm doing them into... I'm going to do them in about five different formats for about the next year and a half. And then when everyone's sick of it, I'll stop. But then no one...
Richard Herring, having a ball.
But yeah, there's not really... There's been one moment where I feared death and got a bit self-indulgently weepy.
But you'd already done a show about death.
Yeah, yeah. So I have done a show about death. I haven't done a show about balls, and that's why my balls have come after me. That's why they wanted the attention, and now they're going to get it. Don't neglect the balls, because this will happen. Look, we're going to have to wrap it up, because we've done too long.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But it's good.
I'm sorry.
Very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been such good fun.
No, it's always lovely to talk to you, and thank you very much for coming back. And,
you're welcome.
Just all the podcasts, the radio show, and then hopefully a new stand-up show. Have you got a book coming out?
Yes.
Yeah.
But
is it a secret?
I don't know.
Okay. You've really got to know.
Hang on, you've got to
write it.
There will be a book based on one of our podcasts.
Okay, great. That's exciting.
Or one of my podcasts.
I hope it's just a book in which you explain golf shots over and over again. Then I hit the ball and it went a bit to the left. And I thought, I've got to hit that with a different club now to get that back.
Yeah, but you can make anything sound bad by doing it in that voice. I held a microphone and I talked into it, and then someone recorded it and put it on the internet. I just put some different things in a tube and came up with a vaccine, and then I put it in people's arms, and some of them didn't like it, and some of them did like it, and that was... You can reduce anything by doing it in that voice.
Golf is not as good as the vaccine for the COVID vaccine.
Or is it?
Or is
I've
it?
Not got COVID yet, and I play a lot of golf. I don't want to spread any conspiracy theories, but 0% of me has had COVID.
It's good to be outside. Ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause, the amazing John Robbins! We'll be back next week with David Badil. See you then. You have been listening to Rahulastapur with me, Rich Terring, and my guest, John Robbins. Thank you to Scant Regard for this beautiful new music. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm also indebted to Chris Evans, not that one. Thank you very much to everyone at the Clapham Grand for looking after us so brilliantly in this run. And thank you to everyone who came to see the shows. We couldn't have done it without you. Well, we could. I did it for a year without you, but it wasn't as good. Thank you also to Kathleen McKeegan from rahulastapur.com for her fantastic research work on old episodes of this show. Do check it out if you like. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Why not visit GoFasterStripe.com/badges, become a monthly badger, get lots of extras, including the guest names ahead of everyone else. So if you are frustrated that the London shows are sold out before you can buy a ticket, become a monthly badger, you'll get priority access to the guest names and be able to book your tickets before the non-badge scum. It's only £3 a month. You can give more if you want, and you get badges, you get lots of backstage videos and all sorts of other extras, and ad-free podcasts if you want. All right, take care. Go away.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to RichHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.